David Schrader's joining us, The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. Of course, we'll talk with him much more about some of the special topics that intrigue David in the world of the paranormal when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dave Schrader, the host of Darkness Radio. Now, that's on our Minnesota Coast to Coast affiliate, the Twin Cities News Talk Station, AM 1130. Dave has had a very active interest in the paranormal since he was a little child. And he was visited by the spirit of his deceased grandmother. Continued activity and experiences kept his passion alive. And his recent interest, of course, has been looking into thoughts, forms, and creatures from all over the place. David, always a pleasure. How are you?
Doing great, George. Thanks a lot for having me back this evening.
You know what? I have such a great time whenever we run into you at speaking engagements or events. You are just a delight, not only as a person, but as someone who truly has a passion for the paranormal.
Well, you know, this is just such a fascinating field, and there's always something more to explore. And, you know, I was listening with fascination to your first guest, and for 7 years that we've been doing the show, we've done prayer and healing requests on air, as I know you have, and we have had some amazing results. I mean, one of our friends from New England had a massive asthma attack about 6 years ago and was put in the hospital. They were giving her last rites. They just didn't see her pulling through, and one of her team members reached out to us and said, I know you've done prayer and healing requests. We need to do something. So we posted for thousands of people from around the world were posting prayer and healing requests and passing them out and circulating this. Within 2 days, the girl was released from the hospital and is a lifelong asthmatic, has never used a puffer.
Isn't that something? That's pure magic, Dave.
It is, and we've seen it time and time again. I mean, you know, and it's been so beautiful because people that come from all different religions and backgrounds and everything, it's the intent of putting it out there. One of the ladies that runs the phenomenology event out in Gettysburg that's coming up here in March, she had reached out to me a while back when her daughter was pregnant, and they had done some type of fetoscope and found that the baby had a brain tumor, and that if this brain tumor didn't dissipate, they would end up losing the child. So again, we poured out prayer and healing requests, and the doctors were blown away by the quick response and how this brain tumor shrunk to nothing and vanished and has never been a problem for this little girl. Now she's, I think, about 4 or 5 years old and just a delight. So prayer and healing, yeah, there is something really amazing about people coming together with one intent of good and watching amazing things blossom.
David, what is it about the paranormal world that has so many people fascinated by it, interested in it? I mean, television is everywhere doing it. People are just into it. How come?
You know, I think a lot of it, George, is the fact that we're getting to that point where we've gone so amazingly fast into a technological age, and there's this separation happening between people. You know, we think technology is bringing us together, and Twitter and Facebook and MySpace and Google Plus and all of these different deals, but it actually is it's breaking us apart, I think, as a community. You know, I sit there and I watch people at tables at our events that are sitting at a beautiful table all together eating dinner. None of them looking at each other or speaking. They're all texting.
That's so true. I was just talking about that last week, by the way.
Yeah, and to me, that it seems like there's this conventional breakdown, but now people are trying to look outside themselves for answers. And you know, they're looking for what could be next. What are we surrounding ourselves with, and how do we move forward? And I think the paranormal is at such a great place right now because of the advent of all of these shows. It's taken what's kind of been this dirty little embarrassing family secret. You know, I mean, in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, if you talked openly about ghosts, people rolled their eyes at you or you know, you were fodder for being made fun of. Now, because of all of these shows, water cooler talk has turned to this. And we've seen it at these live events, you know, everything from NASA engineers to actors and actresses to mothers and attorneys and fathers and police and fire department engineers, all of these amazing people with all of these diverse backgrounds come together with the common interest of trying to find out what goes on next. So I think it's one of the few things in the world that can bring multiple ethnicities, religions, and belief systems together, and they kind of gel and they come together and make people feel united.
Well, with Dave Schrader, of course, he's a dear friend of Joshua P. Warren, who is on our program quite a bit. And you two, was it last year you went to Transylvania?
Yes, we went out to Romania and had just an amazing time. And it was so much fun. I'm going back there this year with another group of listeners. So we're psyched about getting out there. And talk about kind of taking yourself out of your own comfort zone and your own level of what you're used to, we were really kind of put back into the Stone Age for ghost hunting because we couldn't bring all this technology with us over to a foreign country and carry it around, you know, a recorder, a camera, things like that. But it really kind of got back down to letting the atmosphere around you happen and being there to witness it together and having, you know, a collective experience with a group of 10 to 30 people in these different rooms and these old castles and old hotels. And it really was just, to me, it was a really nice back to the ground level and grassroots effort of paranormal investigating.
David, with the things that you have looked at, do you have your own favorites, your own intriguing episodes that you enjoy?
Well, you know what's really kind of gotten really, really intriguing to me, and this has come over the last 2 years, is I've really been involved in this thought form, or the tulpas, the mind form creations of creatures, things that are being seen and witnessed around the world, and how the perceptions of these creatures changes. You know, if you look back, there were all of these alien encounters that were talked about and recognized, and then all of a sudden you get a movie like Close Encounters. Now, lo and behold, everybody that encounters an alien, they look like a creature that they saw from Close Encounters. But for years before that, people would claim that they saw the Nordiques, the, you know, long, tall, blonde hair, blue eyes.
That's right.
You know, and reptilians and all these different, but now they all seem to be this one creature. So I often wonder how much of what we're doing is and witnessing is what we're putting out there, like the prayer talk that we started off this interview with, the intention and expectation of something happening. And now I think that a lot of that has come to fruition because we've had a great couple of years talking about some really creepy characters out there that have quickly become huge in our little world, you know, with the black-eyed kids. There's this character called Rawhead, the Bloody Bones Man, and that one has kind of taken us by surprise how chilling it is. There's the Faceless. There's, you know, these characters that just keep popping up, and now they're surfacing from all around the world as we hear from listeners that check out the podcast, and they're sharing their stories from around the world where they thought they were crazy before.
They're not.
Right. But as we share more stories, suddenly more people are having experiences now.
We're going to get into all those different facets that you just mentioned. Some of your favorite topics, of course. Tell me about the Philip experiment. What is that, David?
You know, talking about the thought forms and going in, you got to go back to the research. And one of the best examples in the 1970s in Canada, a gentleman had decided that they were going to try to create a ghost by setting intention, by creating a backstory. They made this entire scenario up about this character they called Philip. And the professor, along with the students that he worked with, focused and honed, and they tried numerous times to make connections. And it took a long time and a lot of patience for them to suddenly start getting some kind of interaction. And it began with rapping noises on the table. And it quickly escalated to even the table chasing people around the room when nobody was touching it. It would jump around. But the interesting thing about this creation was it could only answer questions to the affirmative or negative that it knew, that you had programmed into it, much like a computer system. So they gave him this personality. They gave him a backstory. If you asked any other part of his life, he wouldn't respond. Anything that they hadn't already pre-programmed, it would not respond. But you could ask it things that were happening currently in current day in situations, and it would respond. And that leads you to believe that it's the collective consciousness of the group at that table having that experience that may be shaping the paranormal experience that they are, in fact, having. So the Philip experiment was really kind of one of the first ones to really take this and grab hold of it and manipulate it and see it come to fruition. And it actually worked really well, too well almost, you know, but other people have been able to go there and have the same experience with Philip.
Now, with this kind of experiment, can anything go awry?
Well, certainly. You know, we don't know, A, what we're tapping into. Was it already something that was there and it's been looking and waiting to feed on somebody, giving it this power and energy and intention? You know, is this really the spirit of Philip? Is this an invented spirit, or is it something that walked in and will take the energy and the attention from people that are willing to give it? You know, if spirits are out there trying to communicate with us and we're talking to an empty room and they're like, well, you know, if there's no Philip over there, but I'd like to be heard and might step in, I think the danger comes in from not knowing exactly who it is or what it is that we're communicating with, nor understanding what we're capable of, physically, with psychokinetic energy, any of that. There's still so much out there that we haven't really worked on. And they did a movie called The Apparition that came out this year, and you talked about Joshua P. Warren, a good friend of ours. He was one of the contributors to that movie to help, kind of oversee and do that. And he actually did some experiments where they tried to create a spirit, only using technology and using a very powerful girl that is very tapped in and very sensitive, Shelley Wright. They were able to actually kind of reinvent this ghost appearance using not only a medium, a sensitive, but using technology to bolster it. So if you're taking the thought process of the Philip experiment, which was maybe 10 to 12 people, and using technology to bolster it, so it's almost like the consciousness of thousands of people focusing on this, how much more power can we give to it?
Well, that's a good point, too. Now, what about the Pearl experiment? What's that?
This, this was a fascinating experiment that I got to watch firsthand. Bill Murphy, who was our Tech Talk technician on our show for a number of years, and he was on, of course, Fact or Faked, on the sci-fi TV.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And I know the production company folks.
Right. Well, Bill had, we went out to an event at the Glen Tavern Inn, and when we were there, they told us these stories of the different ghosts of the Glen Tavern Inn. And it was fascinating to me, and we went through this, and people would try to get evidence, and they were coming up with evidence for just about every one of these ghosts in this location. Well, it wasn't until well after the investigation was over that Bill sat me down and goes, so do you want to know what I was trying to experiment with? And I said, yeah, please. And he said, we created one of the ghosts. The ghost by, I think they nicknamed her Pearl. She had red hair, a green dress, pearl necklace, and she had passed away there. And he said, so all of the ghost stories, there was one fake story, but people were still getting evidence. And we did an event called the Science Fair at the Queen Mary, and I happened to have a couple walk up to me, and they said, hey, I've got to ask you something, Dave. Have you ever heard of the Glen Tavern Inn? I said, yeah, I sure have. Why? And they said, well, my wife and I, we were just out there, and we were taking pictures, and we were in this room, and it was just the two of us, but we caught this picture, and they showed it to me, and George, they caught a photograph of a woman in a green dress with red hair and a pearl.
I love it.
So here was this intention given, and people have gone there for years thinking that the story of Pearl is true, and now she is true. She is being witnessed and videotaped and photographed. And
did they conjure her up, or what do you think she was always around?
That's the real crux of this situation. I have very good psychic medium friends who will tell me that maybe you were given this information to help the spirit make themselves known, that it wasn't just you creating this. It was being implanted in you to give this information and bring her out. But looking at the way thought forms work, the global consciousness, there's no doubt about the amazing effect that we can have when we come together. As we talked about with prayer, if you look at experiments like the random number generators that they have around the world that will pick up on a tragedy or something major happening at, minutes before it begins,
yeah,
and it will continue. One of the biggest things that they said was so amazing was when Michael Jackson died, all of these random number generators around the world began to sync up, and they all started going in the same escalation and covering the same kind of bell curve. It was just unbelievable, but it was because the consciousness of the world came together, and there was this unification almost, and it's so bizarre. But when you start thinking about if we have that kind of ability and manifestation, the books like The Secret have made such a great impact on people because, it's the power of intention. It's the power of positive thinking, and it's the power of what you think about you draw to you. So if we are creating and thinking about these things and putting the effort out there to them, we may be giving life to this energy that's around us at all times, and it takes on these forms. Even the Jewish faith, they had a character they called the golem that they would build out of clay,
yeah,
and give it the intention to do their dirty work, and it would kind of go out as like an enforcer for them and do horrible things. With the intention, this has been something that's been part of religions, different belief systems around the world. So if there's this kind of basic belief system shared by so many different faiths and religions and people that have never spoken together, it tends, in my mind, to link to the fact that there must be something really to this whole phenomena.
Well, David, Joshua also talks about the psychomentium. It's that mirror.
Right.
What is that again, and how does that work?
You know, That's with Dr. Raymond Moody, and I'm so sorry. I was trying to get in touch with him last year when I was out down south to hook up with
him. God, I was just with him at an event.
Do that experiment because I've wanted to see what he can do. And it's, you know, there's so many belief systems that with mirrors that it works as a portal, the way the light bends, the way that it is, that you might be able to actually, you know, see things or project manifestations from them. And, you know, I know Josh, I believe, is still in possession of the original psychomantium mirror that you know, Ray Moody let him have. And, you know, I mean, to think that that mirror has been around the world and has serviced probably thousands upon thousands of people for his experiments is really kind of an intriguing thought. You know, I told Josh, I said, does that ever make you a little concerned that you've got this in your home, knowing that there's all of this energy?
Well, this is the same guy who sent me Robert the Haunted Doll, a little replica. Had to give it away to somebody.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole deal. You know, some people will get these haunted dolls that him and I will be out at an event somewhere, and somebody will come up to me and go, listen, I've got this doll, and it's horrible. Ever since I've gotten it, I hear screaming coming from parts of my room, and I don't want it anymore, and they'll give them to me. And, you know, I've got seven kids, George, so I keep them, you know, plastic wrapped and in my garage where I guess it's safe.
Yeah, you don't give them to the kids.
Right. They never come after me, but I've had them in the house by myself. I've never had any weird experiences. I don't know if it was just timing at that issue, and unfortunately, nobody ever calls me back to say, "Hey, the screaming continued even after you gave, you know, even after I gave you the doll." But you know, a lot of people that will get the fear and are afraid that this item has some kind of negative juju to it, they freak out. We did an event at Rolling Hills Sanitarium about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and we were raising money for their restoration, and they donated an original doll that had been one of the patients. And Mark and Debbie Constantino, two EVP specialists that have been featured on many of the different paranormal shows and are extremely good at getting electronic voice phenomena, they agreed that they would do some EVP work with these dolls and then give the buyer not only the doll but the CD with the EVPs that they captured. And that was one of the funniest experiences because she took this doll, she loved the doll, she took the disc, and came down to the lobby about 2 hours later and handed it to me after paying about $500 for this doll and said, you take it, I don't want it, the donation's on me. And I was like, well, why, what's wrong? And she goes, have you listened to the EVP coming off of that thing? I don't want it in my house. And, you know, it was strange because then nobody wanted to touch that doll, although they were willing to bid for it in an auction. But as soon as there was confirmation that there was something attached to this doll, it flatlined. I think Mark and Debbie Constantino still have this doll in their collection.
I know, those things. It's almost like a Ouija board. There's something that is attached to these things, whether it's a doll or an apparatus.
But, and I've often wondered, and I actually asked Mark and Debbie, and I want to do this experiment with them next time I see them. I want to break out a ketchup bottle and have them start doing an EVP session with a ketchup bottle. Is it the intention that you want to make communication? And whatever you're speaking to, again, you know, the ghost of Tim, my co-host and producer, is he going to just come over and talk because nobody can hear him, but now he knows these people are focused, so okay, fine, I'll come over here by your ketchup bottle and talk into your recorder and try to communication. It's no way of knowing, you know, what is it that we're tapping into. And that's why, you know, so many people are nervous about utilizing things like the Ouija board or the Frank's box.
I won't use it.
Right, and that's because, you know, they've been bred to believe that this negativity can come with it, but there are people that have had remarkable experiences, positive, great, uplifting, life-changing experiences using the Ouija board.
Really?
Sure. Well, Tilda and Tina Fjord, I think are their names, they wrote an entire book, which is a beautiful book of positive affirmations.
Yeah, I think we had them some time ago.
Right, and they used the Ouija board. There's been other people that have done that and have had great experiences. And I tell a lot of people, and, I, you know, our good friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley, too, she's, I think, of the same mind. You know, the Ouija board is not evil. It's plastic and cardboard. But when do we use it? We use it most during, you know, times when we're trying to scare each other.
That's true. David, let's talk more about that and so much more when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Don't touch your dial. Well, my guest on Beyond Belief on our television program this Friday night will be Danyon Brinkley. That's right, Saved by the Light. And you can watch it free by going to GaiamTV.com/George. That's GAIAMTV.com/George. Or go to our host section at the top of our Coast to Coast page and click that, and it opens up, and you can click the TV link. Take advantage. You get 10 days free, which will fall right within that period for you to watch the TV show. Danyon, by the way, we taped the program in Denver was absolutely riveting. So make sure you're part of that. We're going to come back more with David Schrader as we talk about The Other Side on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Schrader with us. And in the 1 o'clock hour Pacific time, as we take phone calls, Karen Dahlman's going to join us for a bit. She's a believer in the Ouija boards, her book, The Spirit of Creativity. And David, let's get into the Ouija board for a moment. As you were saying, and as you will hear from Karen with you a little bit later on, she doesn't think anything's wrong with the Ouija board. Neither do you.
No, I think it's, you know, just as bad if, you know, with audio recorders, dowsing rods, anything. If your intention is wrong, if you're ruled by fear, I think that's when fear gets you. Now, I've used the Ouija board. I've used it on different experiments at locations. I don't get scratched. The board doesn't try to jump up and beat me to death. The planchet has never tried to plunge itself into my neck. So I've never had anything of the negative sort. But again, when we talk about, most people get involved with it and they go and they're at a party and, oh, let's turn off the lights and light some candles and, you know, try to get in touch with the ghost of Captain Howdy. And, you know, when they're trying to invite and they're going into it with the sphere, I think that's when most people have the negative influence. Now, the one thing that I've always found refreshing when you talk to people like Frank Sumption, who created the Frank's Box, or Bill Chappell, who's created so many great tools, Gary Galka, when they talk about their tools, and if things start to come in negative, they forget that we all have one power, and that power is that we can put it away. And I have no stories of, you know, putting the Ouija board back up underneath the game of life and in the morning finding it walking across the floor with a, you know, samurai sword looking to kill me. Nobody's ever told me those stories. They threw it out and it shows back up at their house. You know, there's things like that. You can always send them on to John Zaffis or Bob Murch, the Ouija board historian. They're happy to take your haunted Ouija boards. But I, you know, we used to boil it down to the lowest common denominator. And in a lot of very aggressive hauntings, it started with the Ouija board. But it wasn't like they were doing, you know, enlightening things. They were trying to communicate with, you know, this dead person, that dead person, and they were trying to get some stuff going, and they admit that they were afraid using it at the beginning. So I think that does have a lot more play, again, when you start talking about mind thought forms and tulpas and things like that, that if you put too much energy into that and too much fear, that something, you know, whatever it is, whether it's your own ego or id messing back with you, you know, I'm just not overly... what's the word I'm looking for here? I'm just not overly convinced that the Ouija board is the negativity. I mean, you got to remember, up until 1972, the Ouija board had popular music written about it. It was on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post, done by the very famous artist Norman Rockwell. Sure. It was a part of the culture.
It was part of Americana.
Right, exactly. And it was a 30-second scene in one horror movie that suddenly flipped the persona of the Ouija board and made it this terrifying tool. And they didn't even use it, really. I mean, it was just kind of a 30-second little blip in talking about using it and about Captain Howdy. And that's what made everybody believe that, oh, see what can happen. And this was based on a true story. Well, sure, the idea of The Exorcist was based on a true story, but it wasn't a little boy playing with a Ouija board that got possessed. And people just ran with it. And again, I think that's where the power of the mind and your intent can actually put the ball in motion and make these things start coming to you and happen to you.
Let's talk a little bit about what you called earlier created creatures. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, how are they conjured up in the first place, David?
Well, you know, there's many different stories. You know, if you look back, one of the characters that we've been dealing with a lot right now is a character called Rawhead, the Bloody Bones Man. And if you look in old English literature, there was a character called Rawhead, the Bloody Bones Man, and he was basically the boogeyman for children over in Europe. If you were caught swearing or doing something naughty, the Bloody Bones Man might come for you and eat your, you know, flesh. And if you'd be, you know, naughty kids would be up doing stuff they weren't supposed to. If they looked in a cabinet or cupboard and they saw the Bloody Bones Man, he would be there on top of a pile of bones, smiling, and he looked as though he'd been stripped of his flesh, you know, just that red, bloody musculature that was left over. So that was old literature. Now, I wasn't even familiar with that story. And about a year and a half ago, I received an email from a listener when we were talking about the black-eyed children quite a bit on the show. And he said, you know, I'm not a big believer in the supernatural or paranormal. I can't say I've really had any experiences. But with that said, I had one thing happen when I was a kid that I cannot get out of my head. And I've never heard of anybody having this experience. So, you know, I wanted to share it with you. So I read it on air. And basically the experience was, this, when he was about 9, 10 years old, he was sleeping in his bed, And when he rolled over, there laying in the bed next to him with its back to him was this blood-red man. Yeah. And he could see its breathing. And he knew, without seeing it, he could tell that it was awake. And he laid there for what he felt like were hours. He finally got the courage up, slid off the bed, and started to run down to his mom and dad's room.
I would have been out of there longer than that, huh?
Right. Well,
way sooner.
As he's making his way down to the room, he starts hearing his dad's voice in his head, you know, about how many times he's jumped out of bed and got the whole family up in arms over nothing. So he thinks, okay, maybe I should double check I saw what I saw. So he starts heading back to his room when he hears a thump on the floor and something rolling across the floor. He scoots in and sleeps with mom and dad for the rest of the night. But now here is the first introduction on our radio show of the Rawhead Bloody Bones Man. This is the first time I've heard this character, and there was no name for him. And then we started getting more and more emails. The other one I got that was just as chilling, two brothers, they shared bunk beds. And he said his little brother would sleep on the bottom bunk. And at night when he was afraid, there were times he would climb up and climb into bed with him and get under the covers, and they would just sleep together. And he said one night he was facing the wall, and he felt the ladder and felt somebody crawl underneath the sheets with him. And he rolled over thinking he's about to talk to his little brother, and there laying in the bed facing him is this Rawhead man laying there. And it's just these horrific eyes and this huge Cheshire cat grin staring.
Do we know the history of this Bloody Bones man?
No. Again, like I said, it came from old English, you know, myth, and that this was a character.
But we don't know if it was a real person, do we?
No. There's no storyline to back that up. It's believed to be more along the lines of just this creature that, you know, as most of these things came out, it was a way to try to control kids, to keep them from lying.
Like the boogeyman.
Getting out of bed, right, doing these things, but with all this fear. Now, here's another guy telling us the same story, and he laid there facing this thing, and it didn't move, it didn't talk, it didn't scratch him. It just laid there and stared at him for hours until he finally closed his eyes, and then he felt the sheets drop, and when he looked, it was gone. People have experienced this where they're in their rooms and they look, and in the closet door, which is open, you know, 5, 6, 7 inches, they see him standing in the doorway staring at them. So we've been hearing stories like that. Then it started going off onto a slightly different tangent, but I've had listeners come up to me and say, Dave, this is going to sound mental, but I've been alone in my home and I felt things that would keep touching me or moving around by me, and I always had the mental impression that it was this raw, bloody form. And every time I hear these stories, they put a chill through me because I know that's what I was encountering in my home. And this story has gained momentum. And all of a sudden, now we're getting stories pouring in from around the world of people that have experienced this. Now, is it because we put this out there, we started to share it, and now it's in the minds of people, and especially at bedtime, and they're thinking about this, and they're worried, and there's fear, and they're putting out this energy, and now this thing is making itself known to people more and more?
That could be.
That could have a big part of it. Now, like Slender Man is a really popular new character, and if you do your research on Slender Man, this was actually this strange little creature that was created by Something Awful forums. They had this kind of idea up, I think it was around 2009. The idea was that this character would be a tall, very thin, tall man in a black or gray suit, red, black tie, white shirt, no eyes, no mouth, no clearly defined facial features. No,
I mean,
hair.
Like a, was his face like a shadow, or just was a face without
like
these
a
features?
Face, right. And now here we hear about this story, and he could be anywhere from 6 feet to 15 feet tall, depending on the situation. But usually around 6'8", 6'9", in that kind of range is where we hear most of the stories. Now, this was done as an experiment, and just as a side gag on a website, create a paranormal image kind of deal. Now people are experiencing the Slender Man. They're seeing him. As a matter of fact, there's a bit of movie and there's a few video games out there based on Slender Man that terrify people. This is like a little video game application for your phone that people say is really chilling and creepy, but you're putting out this intention and this information. Now I have another version of the Slender Man we can talk about in a little bit, but you know, here was a new character that was brought into the lexicon, but we have a starting point. We know that in August 2009, it was first mentioned in the Something Awful forum in the Create Paranormal Images section, and somebody started to build this character, and it took on a life of its own.
David, as we look at all of these, you are not really a believer in what we've always talked about, and that was the old conventional hauntings, the grandmother at the foot of the bed and the haunted house there. You don't really believe in that, do you?
You know, my theories on ghosts have changed radically in about 7 or 8 years from where I started, you know, much like everybody else, believing it was just our dead relatives that were there to visit us or, you know, the old owner of the home. And as I've done more research and I've heard more and more stories, I've begun to swing the other way and wonder if we're not dealing more with things like time slips, if we're not dealing with more angelic interventions when it's family members and things that have come forward to us. And I start to see the pattern emerge in these different stories. I mean, I've got to believe, and I don't know where you stand on this with me, George, but it unnerves me when you think, okay, Native American hunting ground or burial ground, the Native Americans have passed on. They're in the great hunting ground in the sky now. They're off to whatever their next adventure is. Then why is it that they're so upset when we disturb their bones or their burial place, when we uproot, white Anglo-Saxon cemetery and put in a 7-Eleven? Why are these ghosts so mad and angry and hanging out there? You know, I would like to think that when I die, that this part of my journey is over and I moved on to something else. Why am I hanging around my body or my bones in a cemetery somewhere? To me, that scares me more than any ghost story I've ever heard. I don't want to be stuck to the physical remains that I've left behind. I've been brought up to believe something better is coming. So as I've listened to these stories, and I've had my own experiences where my grandmother came to visit me when I was a child, and she called my aunt on the phone 3 times after her passing. So there's something to visitations, but it was in a very short time after the passing. My grandfather visited me the same way. We had, these similar kind of stories that also come up and crop up, especially dream visitations, which seems so prevalent in so many cases across the world. But I've just started to believe that, when you look at the idea of most hauntings, George, how many times do we hear, it's really strange, my grandmother's got this house, they built it from scratch, nobody's ever died on this property, we don't have any close relatives that have died. They haven't bought all these antiques or brought anything in. Grandpa and grandma are still alive, but they keep seeing things. And things are moving about in their house, and they can hear voices. And how can a piece of property or a house that was freshly built in the 1950s, 60s, and has never been anything but a cornfield before that, how can it be a haunted house?
Well, what if somebody was buried in the cornfield?
That could be a part of it. Or it could be that, people think in a linear fashion, that what they're being haunted by is something from the past. How do we know that what's haunting them isn't something from the future? I mean, when we think about the fact that there are so many well-known places that are known to have been haunted, Waverly Hills Sanitarium in Louisville, Kentucky, there were conversations when it was a working hospital.
How about that penitentiary you had me at?
Right, Pennsylvania. Eastern State Penitentiary, that's a perfect example, too. There were all these stories of people that would be, of hauntings that would take place, and people would see the spirits when it was full, live and active. Well, how do we know, George, that what Al Capone experienced in his cell, the weird voices and seeing the faces appear outside his cell, how do we know that that wasn't the Eastern State Penitentiary event with George Norrie and Dave Schrader looking in his cell and talking for a few minutes?
You can't. That's true.
Right?
But I think, David, a lot of people have a difficult time trying to think that the future affects them. So they're more linear. They're thinking of the past. They're thinking of something that has died.
Right.
Even other dimensions. I don't think a lot of people comprehend that.
Right. But again, lining up into the other dimensions and those different things going on, quantum physics is that, talked about the time theory, the string theory, and the fact that time is not linear and that it's all happening at once. And we also have to remember, to a spirit, we've been told by how many people that there is no time for spirit, that they can traverse however they want to. Well, if I die in 2030, what keeps me from visiting my house in 1950? What keeps me from visiting those places? If time is irrelevant to me and I can just be where I want to be, as so many mediums and psychics and sensitives have said, why couldn't we do that? And maybe you're just sensitive enough that you pick up on my energy being there because it's different enough from what you're used to. It's different enough from the pattern of energy that's there that's why you pick up on me.
Well, that could be.
Yeah.
Do you find that people that go on like ghost hunts, that they have to all be tuned in order to pick up anything?
No, well, I've actually found what's kind of funny to me, you know, when we started doing these events, we went to Warwick, Rhode Island, and we were in a hotel, which also happened to be haunted. It was like a Days Inn, and there was a few suicides and horrible things that had happened there. And this guy had brought his wife, and they ended up, this guy and another guy ended up talking. They were both there totally against their will, but this was their idea of if they make their wife happy and they come to this silly little ghost hunt, they'll get to go to Vegas for Super Bowl or do what they want to do. So these two guys are non-believers. One guy's in one group, another guy's in the other group. Well, the first group goes up, the other group goes to a different part of the hotel, and suddenly the first group comes down, and the guy's like, I got to go. I don't feel right. My throat felt like it was clenching, and somebody was choking me. That room was totally off the charts. I don't like it at all. And without telling the next group, they go up there. The other husband comes down with the same exact complaint. I'm dizzy. It feels like I'm choking. I couldn't breathe. I don't know what's going on. And we find out that somebody had actually slit their own throat in that room.
Oh, geez.
And called down for help, having second thoughts after doing it. And we caught weird EVP of a gurgling voice up there. But these two guys who were not tuned in at all, did not want to be there, had no interest, both had very similar experiences in the room without knowing what the history of that room was or what to expect. And the funny thing was the two wives who were so excited and amped up and were there to have an experience had nothing happen to them. And they were just totally irritated with the husbands that they felt that they got gypped out of their trip because they came to have a ghostly encounter, and the two husbands who didn't even want to be there are the ones that had something happen to them. So I don't think you have to be tuned in for it. I think, like everything that's in life, you know, everything has its own frequency. And if you just happen to be in that right zone, that may be why you and I could stand directly next to each other and take a photograph, and you get a picture of the apparition, and I do not. You just might have been in that right frequency. You might have seen it. I might not have. It had nothing to do with, oh, George is more sensitive than Dave or vice versa. It just happens that that spirit to you was in the frequency that was best able for you to make that communication. You know, as we tune that radio dial in to pull in a crisper signal for coast-to-coast AM, anything beside it, we're going to get those ghost voices, though, from the other stations bleeding through until you tune that in. And if you or I or somebody else is just tuned into that location and that moment, we may capture and see and experience things that nobody else ever will.
Can you address the old hag syndrome?
Sure. You know, that's part of what I love doing about the show and the job and going out and talking to people as well, George, is we love to educate, enlighten
everything.
People so that, you know, they're not fearful all the time. And so many people have experienced the old hag syndrome, which for listeners that may not know this or know it by this title, it's when you wake up and you're unable to move. It feels as though somebody's pressing down on your chest. You can't breathe. And there's, you know, a real psychological and paranormal edge to it, so people believe. What a lot of people don't know and don't do the research on, they'll look up the syndrome and find it, and everybody will talk about the horrific value of it, but they don't talk about what could be causing it. Our body, when we're at rest and sleeping, our brain is kicking out an anesthetic to our body to keep it in place because our brain can't tell the difference between a real and a vividly imaginative experience. So if the brain is working on full capacity and I'm fighting Rocky Balboa in my dream, I'm going to be beating the hell out of my spouse in my dreams, you know, with my physical body. So the brain shuts that part of your body down so you don't have that happen. Now, one of the dogs or cats comes in and knocks something over and you wake up quickly. Well, you snap to it, but that secretion is not stopped from the brain yet, and it tapers off. So you're still in that kind of paralyzed state. And when we're sleeping, we're in that deep breath, low breath position, and you want to drag in that full breath of air and catch it, and you can't. But a lot of this is just a physiological effect because of the way we sleep.
Well, I agree with that. David, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back in a moment. But still a lot of people report seeing the old hag. So I want to talk about that and so much more with you when we come back. David Schrader, our guest, his website, darknessradio.com. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.